I mean, I didn't dunk on her. I want to make that clear. I crossed her up
Okay.
brutally
You did.
and slammed it home.
You devastated her. I'm not. That
You
was.
caught her
That's true.
flat-footed for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Episode 81 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus daily podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of BP Boston and the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP author and Fantasy Team member Jeff Quinton and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Craig, if you were going to, sort of declaratively state that you're going to see me somewhere later, where do you think you would see me?
I'll see you on this podcast.
Sure. Jeff, if you bite into bread and you taste pumpernickel, is it rye or is it wheat?
I'd have to say that bread is more of a spectrum to me. It's more fluid than that.
I think we learned that.
It's interesting because bread is specifically not fluid. It's a solid.
Not with that attitude anyway. All right, so as you can tell, we are missing our fearless leader, Brett Sayer, tonight. Craig and I and Jeff went to go visit Brett last weekend, and I don't think he's recovered yet. So we brought Jeff on instead, and what we're going to do tonight is talk about the Dynasty third baseman rankings that Brett made. So this is particularly great for us because we can trash this list, just absolutely destroy it, and Brett won't be here to use his abilities, his persuasion against us, because usually he's wrong but better at arguing. But can't do it tonight. So for those of you who have not been following along consistently, right now BP is going through a sort of positional series where week by week we tackle everything you could possibly want to know about a position from a fantasy point of view. So we have rankings for just next year, three-year rankings, Dynasty League rankings, get to know a prospect series, AL and NL only rankings, anything you want to know, we have it up. And actually, when you're listening to this, we've already surpassed sort of the shortstop week, but we're just going to focus on third baseman today and then hit you with shortstops and outfielders next time. So without further ado, let's talk about the top of this list. And Craig, we'll start with you. So Brett's top three are Bryant, Arenado, and Donaldson. Do you think that is sort of a tier unto itself, or would you have Bryant and Arenado, a sort of small gap and then Donaldson?
No, I think it's reasonable to have Donaldson in there. And I would say if you're more on a short-term spectrum, I think it's reasonable to take these guys in any order in the next year or two. I think obviously you go Bryant just based on age, because I think they all produce at around the same level over the next few years, and he has a huge leg up in the long term. But I really don't think there's a reason to kind of demote Donaldson out of it. He's been incredible for, what, three straight years now. So I don't see a reason to back out unless you're really worried about the aging curve hitting him hard.
Fair enough. Jeff, Arenado is under Rockies' control through 2019. But, for a second here, let's pretend he does not re-sign with the Rockies and he signs in a more neutral setting. You know, not the Giants or the Padres, but more neutral. Would he still be number two for you?
Yeah, for me, Arenado's still going to be in this top tier, even if he was outside Coors. I mean, I don't know what kind of haircut you want to put on him for power and average, but even if it's 10-15%, I mean, he still went over 40 home runs the last 2 years, still put up averages of 287 in 2015 and 294 in 2016, and those are going to be elite numbers, even with even if you shave that down for outside of Coors, the counting stats obviously won't be as good because his surrounding players, aren't going to be benefiting from the surrounding lineup won't be benefiting from Coors. But even so, that still looks better than Seager to me or any of the names below that. So I'm going to be, I'd happily take that for the next 4 or 5 years, regardless of ballpark.
Yeah, and just to jump in on that, I mean, if you just look at, I only pulled 2016, so it might be a bigger gap in other years, but his away OPS in 2016 was 832. He had 16 home runs on the road. Like, even if you just account for his, if you just doubled his away numbers, he'd be a 30 homer guy. You know, so there's still a ton of value there, and guys tend to hit better at home no matter where they are, and we've seen guys adjust from you know, having Coors as a home field to having a more of a pitcher's park as a home field, guys like Matt Holliday. So you know, I concur with that, and I think you can see it with how good he is despite being away from Coors half the time, and that's an area where a lot of guys struggle, is that adjustment. But he's, while there is a big gap, about 150 points of OPS, it's still really valuable.
So moving to the next tier, we have Kyle Seager at 4, Miguel Sano at 5, and Anthony Rendon at 6. I was a little surprised to still see Sano this high. I mean, mm-hmm. I think we all know that the power potential is still there for sure, but he, you know, he wasn't didn't have a terribly inspiring 2016 season. I'm trying to look up his stats right now for quick reference. He hit 236, 319, 462. He did hit 25 homers and a little shy of 500 plate appearances, but struck out 36% of the time. So, Craig, we'll go back to you. Would you have Sano this high, or would you have him a little lower?
No, I'd have him lower, and I was just trying to pull up. I would probably flip him with Bregman. I was slow to come around on Bregman in general, just as a prospect. I wasn't sure if the power was going to be real, but he, you know, obviously we all know about his really slow start to the season. I think he was what, 0 for 32, his first 32 or 29 at bats. But if you go from the date he got his first hit through the end of the season, that's 41 games. He hit 308, 355, 562, 8 home runs. You know, that's a really valuable player. He's in his early 20s. He's only 22. You know, he's got 2 years on Sano. And as much as I like him, I mean, there's a lot of value in a guy who, I think, if we say that last year was maybe Sano's, maybe not worst season, but typical of a lower end season, and you still get 25 homers out of it, that's not so bad. So if he does hit 240, you're talking like maybe 32, 35 homers, something like that. So I get the appeal, but I'd be much more interested in a lower variance guy like Bregman, who I think can contribute across the board in terms of runs and average and maybe even swipe a few bags here and there. And so I'd probably flip them. I might even take Bregman over Rendon.
Jeff, what do you see as Sano's sort of ultimate power upside given the strikeout issues?
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, we've seen with guys in, you know, Chris Carter's or Chris Davis's, you know, other guys named Chris, that, you know, you could do the high strikeouts and high home run thing if the team's willing to trot you out there every day. And you can get into the 40s or even, you know, flirt with 50. But I think what we're seeing as far as from a valuation perspective after the season, being a home run only player, especially if you're negative, if you're providing, you know, plenty of negative value in average and stolen bases, it just doesn't add up to as valuable a player as someone who's producing modestly all the way through. I think the thing for Sano is there's big upside in an OBP league, because I think there's a chance that, you know, he does walk, you know, 15% of the time like he does in 2015, or could even, you know, maybe beat that a little bit if he can really find his way there. But if he's in an average league, I think the average really caps his upside. And I don't know, it would be very hard for him to, I would say, flirt with the number 4 or the number 5 third base ranking for a single season, let alone, you know, consistently.
So we have, after Bregman at 7, which I'm assuming you guys caught on to, that's where he's ranked. There's sort of the start of another tier with players that have absolutely nothing in common. So we have Longoria at 8, Devers at 9, Franco at 10, Turner at 11, and Beltre at 12. So, you know, everyone from a player with probably 2 to 3 years left max to a player who is still a year or two away from even seeing the majors. So pretty difficult to rank, I think. But I want to start at the top with Longoria, who's sort of reinvented himself as an interesting player. He'll be 31 for almost the entire 2017 season. So he's not quite as old as some people think. And last year he hit 270, 318, 521, and those first two numbers are pretty similar to what he did in 2015, but the slugging percentage was way up. So he had 36 home runs last season, whereas he had hit 22 and 21 the 2 years before, respectively. So, Jeff, do you think this is an outlier, or that was an outlier Longoria season, or do you think he's someone who can challenge for 30 homers with some regularity in sort of the, I don't know, penultimate stage of his career?
Yeah, so looking at him, I mean, he's kind of seen the same thing that we're seeing with a lot of guys, which is, you know, that increase in home run per fly ball rate that we're seeing. You know, we saw all over the place last season, not to career highs for Longoria, which I guess is a good indicator, but still a big jump up, you know, back to his heyday rates, but also an increase in just in fly ball percentage, a career high in fly ball percentage as well. So, you know, when you take the sum of those two, you see the home runs go up. So I never know what to do with guys in these cases. You know, it's a question we're all asking consistently for a lot of players. I think he'll probably rise and fall throughout, you know, based off of how the league trend moves. But that said, I do think that the 21, 22 home runs that he showed the previous 2 years, I do think that that might be the lower end of his spectrum. I think that maybe the 32 home runs he hit in 2013, you know, those high 20s, low 30s, might be more realistic the next couple of years. And that makes him a pretty solid bet with this ranking here, which I think is a pretty fair one from Brett.
I just want to take this time to point out that Evan Longoria does not run anymore. This is my annual reminder that Evan Longoria does not run anymore, because I think everybody still thinks he does. He does not. It's been a long time.
Yeah, he ran in like 2010, right?
Yeah, it's been a very, very long time. 2010 is the last time he had double-digit steals. Oh my God, that's the only time he had double-digit steals. That is surprising. I would have bet the over there. See, the more you know about retroactive Evan Longoria stats, the better you are prepared.
It's going to be really important for those people who play in leagues that play the past or whatever.
You guys just want to riff on Evan Longoria counting stats, past and present, for the next like 20 minutes?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Devers is at 9, and I thought I was aggressive on him until I saw Brett's ranking, because our cumulative top 101 is done now, and I think we ended up with Devers at 10 overall. Craig, is this fair? I mean, are you comfortable having him ahead of a guy like Franco, who doesn't have his upside but who is young, or, you know, really, really solid contributors right now in Turner or Beltre? Or do you think this is a little bit aggressive for a prospect?
I mean, I think it's a little bit aggressive, but I don't want to say that necessarily relative to Franco, who I might be a little bit lower on in general. And, you know, you get to Turner and Beltre. Beltre is obviously towards the end of his career. Well, hopefully not, but probably is. And Turner's already exiting his prime. So I think you just end up in a weird spot with Devers, where this feels really aggressive because of it's in the single digits, and he, you know, he's just going to be in double A this next year probably. But at the same time, I, you know, given the names behind him, I'm not sure they have a much better case to be ahead of him. I mean, I think once we exit this tier, you're talking about Nick Senzel, and I would take Devers over Senzel. So I agree with you that it feels aggressive, but I'm not exactly sure if I was looking in the long term, if I'm rebuilding or if I'm drafting a dynasty league from scratch, that I'd necessarily take, you know, if I'm competing this year, I'll take Turner over him. Sure. But long term, I don't have a much of an issue with this.
Sure. Well, let's stay
Let
on Franco.
Let me ask you guys something real quick for Devers. He stole 18 bases last year.
Yeah, that's minor
more
league.
Than four. Is that a thing or that's not a thing?
That's minor league pitchers and catchers and fielding. I mean, he's he's not a bad athlete, but he's not going to steal a bunch of bases.
And,
like, he's not a bad athlete for his size. Like, he gets that cap.
He's trending toward big boy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gotcha.
Like, it's one of those things where, like I say, he's not a bad athlete, but it really comes with a caveat for a guy his size, and that's never really what you want if you're trying to get a guy running, you know, in stolen bases.
George is reminding us of that Garen Caccini 56 steal season as a potential warning sign about Red Sox third baseman stealing.
There's an article to be had here, just like absurd stolen base season from people who never deserved it in the minors.
Yeah, we should get Sam to do it.
Fun little retrospective.
So, Craig, let's talk about Franco for a second, because you said you're low on him, and I sort of still like him. So what is it about his profile that you don't think is going to translate as well to fantasy as maybe people who loved him as a prospect thought it might?
So, I mean, obviously, he's another guy that you look at the 25 home runs, and that's really nice. And I think in a full season, if he's going to get, you know, 150-plus games as a regular in the Phillies, playing in that park, that's eminently attainable. I guess it's just that he's someone who's seen his value swing kind of wildly throughout his career, although I think for the most part he's just pretty much been the same guy and gotten different results depending on the season. You know, he's had some years where his BABIP's been really high and he's looked like a world beater in average. I just think there was a lot of hype coming for him entering this season, because he came up and hit, you know, he had half a season, which is a plenty big sample size. He doesn't strike out a ton. He hit 280, and he had the power, which he's always had. But I think that major league pitchers are going to be able to take advantage of his aggressiveness. And while he does have really good bat to ball, which limits his strikeouts, in my opinion, it's going to result in a lot of weak contact. And so I think the 255 he showed this year is a lot more representative of his kind of true talent for batting average. It might, you know, creep up into the 260s, maybe hit 270, but I think that's more the range we're talking about. And if that's the case, you know, you look at the on base percentage and it's 306. And so I just think at some point, you know, you start worrying about how much playing time does a guy who hits 300 get, depending on what else he does. And I think there's a case to be made that he gets a full slate, but it kind of complicates things a little more. And so I'm just a little more cautious in terms of taking on that risk. And then you add in, I mean, just on top of everything, like, he does not run. So you're not getting anything for him there. I just think he's a little more of a volatile long-term prospect because of the potential for a low OBP thing than some of these other guys.
That's fair. I think it's tough with guys like Franco because
he's tough.
He's on the short list of players who have like the biggest gap between fantasy and real life value.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a much better fantasy asset than he is a real life player. But I do see him as someone who's going to be able to hit around 270 with 25 plus bombs a year. So, you know, not a world beater, like you said, but I think someone who could flirt with the back of the top 10 third base position for the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable. I just think there's a lot of high variance. Like, some years he's going to be really, really good, and other years it's going to be like more in the 15 to 20 range. And I guess when I'm looking at something like this, I don't think the upside is going to get him necessarily into the top five. It might be like on the fringe of that. And so if that's kind of the output range I'm looking at, I'd rather go with someone who's a little steadier. You know, if it was something where he was going to put up a Nolan Arenado type season in his good years, I'll take on that risk. But I don't think that's quite the case.
Sure. All right. So let's focus. I'm going to take us through 20. So we have 14 through 20, and we'll sort of, you know, expand on these guys, then take a quick break, and then do a false precision round and go home. So this next sort of tier has Nick Castellanos, Todd Frazier, Joey Gallo, I'm sorry, Joey Gallo, Jose Ramirez and Mike Moustakas. So another tier that sort of lacks any sort of cohesion. Jeff, is this, you know, we talked about guys like Sano ranking up at five. You know, what's the sort of reason that Sano can rank at five, but Gallo is down at 16?
Well, my guess is that because Sano has shown it a little bit in 2015, as far as what it could be. And I'm also thinking that Brett just likes Sano as a prospect overall more, that he's going to make a little bit more contact than will Gallo. So I think that's the big difference. But to me, I think if you think that there's a cap on value for someone, no matter what the power is, if they can't produce elsewhere, then I can't really explain the difference. It doesn't register for me.
Where would you have Gallo on this list?
Well, I think Gallo's probably, I would have Gallo probably down right, probably right after Profar. So maybe at 21. And then I'd probably have Sano further, you know, bumped further down. Not below Gallo, obviously, bumped down from where he currently is rated.
You're lucky you're handsome, Jeff, because Gallo should be higher. Craig.
Ben, you've been kind of directing traffic here. So what is it that you, what's your case for Gallo?
Okay, so I would have Gallo a little higher, and I agree with Jeff in that I guess I'd have Sano lower. So for me, maybe it's more this looks like a huge delta between these two players who I consider to be somewhat similar or at least have similar ceilings. I know Gallo swung and missed at pretty much everything yet again in AAA, but he also managed to hit a lot of home runs, and he walks a lot, like Jeff talked about with Sano. You know, there is some upside to those of us in OBP leagues. So, you know, if we're talking about Sano as a guy who can hit 240 with 40 bombs, I think Gallo could hit 230 with 35 bombs. I know it's a little trickier because Gallo doesn't really have a spot right now, especially with the Rangers re-signing Napoli. And they did sign Beltre to an extension, right?
I think so, yeah. And yeah. He got a couple more years.
So there is a tougher path to playing time for Gallo, and I do recognize that. But for me, that sort of power upside puts him ahead of Frazier, who is basically just, you know, at this point in his career, Frazier is just that, but actualized, and he's like, what, 10 years older than Gallo? And Castellanos, who I've never been crazy high on. I think Castellanos is fine, but I'll take the power upside.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think we all know the risks and relative rewards of Gallo. It's just kind of how much you're going to buy into which one of those things rolls out as he plays.
Yeah, I would consider Gallo over Senzel. I don't think I would do that, but to me, they're sort of in the same tier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I also think the gap between, I mean, that's three spots, right? It's not too many.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that's within what Jeff Paternoster likes to call the fudge factor.
That could be misconstrued.
Well, so it goes.
Yeah. All right. So, Craig, we had an interesting talk on GChat the other day about Jose Ramirez, because I know people were surprised that he ranked behind. Who did he end up ranking behind on the Indians 25 and under list that everyone was?
Tristan McKenzie.
Yeah. He ranked behind McKenzie on the U25 list. And you thought that was a defensible position. So, and I know this is fantasy, so it's a little bit different, but I guess talk about what some red flags are that you see with Ramirez.
Yeah, I mean, I think the argument there is just based on kind of his prior production and what he was. And I think there's a counterpoint to that, which is that he's always kind of been pretty good in the minors. But at the major league level, he was not very productive. I mean, he didn't hit for average. He didn't hit for power. And he did all of that in 2016, and he did it at age 24. So like there's plenty of reason to buy in, and I get that. I just think that at the same time, like, he was looking more and more like a utility man who wasn't going to hack it at the big league level entering 2016. And he obviously did much better than that. But if you want to have a longer kind of memory in terms of his performance and how major league pitchers were able to get him out for parts of three seasons prior, I'm not sure that's entirely out of line. I mean, you know, even if you take his major league line in full, 275, 331, 404. That's not bad at all. And I don't think it's out of place in this kind of ranking where Brett has him. But it's also not necessarily a distinguishing batting line. And his defense is fine. It hasn't gotten great, you know, reviews in terms of defensive metrics, no matter pretty much which one you use. And I know I was looking at Pecota for him at the time, and I think his Pecota projection has him at half a win this year, which is pretty low. And I don't think I'm that low on him. And I think that's relatively unreasonable. But you know, it lets you know that kind of how one model is weighting his likely performance.
Let me ask you guys this. His BABIP 2 years ago was, if I'm looking at this right, was something like 216. Is that right? 232 BABIP. Which
like and that was in 2015. Average. Yeah.
Yeah, in 2015, 2 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. His BABIP was 232. I mean, how much of that is like, should we just throw out 2015 that it was that bad? Like that something was like, it doesn't look like anything else he's ever done.
Yeah. I mean, I think
is that him not being able to adjust to major league pitching, figuring him out?
Well, I think it can go on. I think that's too low, right? I don't think you can expect that to be where he settles. I mean, if you look at the batted ball profile, he had 13% infield fly balls. That's pretty high. And those are automatic outs, right? So when you look at that, I mean, you're certainly going to, when you hit that many pop-ups, you're going to get a much lower BABIP. You know, I would say that he had a 333 BABIP, you know, in 2016, and he had a 10% infield fly ball rate. So, you know, he saw an uptick in line drive percentage. I don't know how stable that is year to year. And so if he's going to continue to have an infield fly ball rate in the close to the double digits, I'd expect him to hit for something of a lower average. A lower average at, you know, from 312 is certainly playable in fantasy. So I don't mean that as a knock on his future production, but I would expect probably under a 300 average next year.
So before
concern is this, that our first like major full look for him was, you know, when everyone would have any kind of excitement about him was really bad. And when that happens, we tend to maybe not adjust, particularly in formats that are, you know, super forward looking. And you don't carry that kind of pedigree. But I don't know. I like just kind of what his profile as far as what his chase rate, his contact rate were all really good. He looks like someone who can contribute across the board, even if he doesn't provide that high average, which he probably won't. But again, I think that ranking is probably fine. That doesn't necessarily add up to someone better than where Brett has him.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Jeff. And, you know, the stolen bases aren't something to ignore either. He had 22 stolen bases last year. I think if you want to say in a roto league, like I think he could out-earn Todd Frazier or even Nick Castellanos pretty easily, just with his across-the-board contributions, including speed. So I could certainly see someone wanting to be more aggressive with him on that front.
So before we kick it out to break, the last two players in the top 20 are Ulias Gurriel and Jurickson Profar. Jeff, at what point do we move? Do we forget what we once thought Profar could be? He's going to be 24. He's coming off of a pretty poor showing in the majors. He now does have, granted, a few years apart, but he has a full season's worth of of time in the majors, and the overall line isn't very inspiring. And I know 24 isn't old, but you know, to me at this point, he's sort of a player without a permanent home and without a carrying fantasy tool. Obviously, Brett disagrees, and Brett has been consistently high on Profar. So, sort of, you know, where do you weigh in on that debate?
Yeah, I mean, I where I put him is that I think there's definitely skill there still, and he's never really had that, you know, quite full opportunity, even though he didn't do much with it last year. It's one of those things that's, I believe, is really situationally dependent. If you're trying to compete this year, I think you should be able to find someone that's still a little excited about him, or hopefully a few people that are a little excited about him and be able to move him. So, but at the same time, if I'm a person not competing this year, and someone's looking to get rid of him and can't find that kind of demand, I'd be happy to scoop him up, and plug him in. I think it's one of those things where I'd like to say there's a definitive answer on him, but I don't feel comfortable doing so. I think there's just a huge range of probabilities. I mean, he's still only 24. And so if there's someone that's super definitive one way or the other, and it fits your needs, from where you sit on the competitive cycle, I think he's someone you could take advantage of either on a lottery ticket side or being able to still gain a little profit from them by selling them. Sorry, that's a terrible non-answer, but that's really what I believe.
Profar inspires a lot of non-answers. Craig, anything to add?
No, I mean, I think that's right. I'm someone who's going to be willing to gamble on the talent. I mean, he basically had two full years off, and I don't know how reasonable it is to expect him to return to form, especially at the major league level. I think he's going to be better this year, and I think this could be a prime opportunity to buy low. Is there a chance he's never the guy he was? Yeah, sure. And so I think you have to be cognizant of that. But, you know, he looked pretty good in the field. He was even able to play some shortstop, stuff like that. I still think he's going to round into form. I trust in the talent level that he has. So he's someone I'm probably willing to be take on that risk proposition a little more. But I think Jeff nailed it in terms of just where you are personally on him.
So basically, the only thing that can give us an answer on Profar, as Enya once told us, is only time. Welcome back to episode 81 of Tino. I hope you use that break to think of some really forced Enya references of your own. So since we're only doing one list this week, we are just going to spend 10, 15 minutes on a false precision round here and touch on the back half of the third base list. Really, there are only another 20 names that are of any consequence. The last 10 are pretty ugly. So Jeff, we'll start with you. In the 21 through 26 tier, who do you think is capable of making a jump to the top 15 at this time next year?
I mean, I'll take the obvious. I don't know if it's the obvious one. To me, it's Jake Lamb. What he did in the first half of last year was pretty incredible. I think he had 20 home runs in the first half, with solid average and, you know, and good counting stats. Do I think that's probably, is he going to put together back-to-back halves like that at any given time? Probably not, but he really fell off a ledge in the second half. And I think that, I don't know, it seemed like a slump. And if he can go a year slumpless, which I like the way, I like his swing, I like the way that he uses the whole field. I think there's a few seasons where he can carry that all the way through, not all the way through the season, but a higher percentage of that all the way through the season. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him up higher a few seasons over the next, up higher in that 15 range over the next couple of years.
So, Jeff, on Lamb, I agree he's the name to me, but are you kind of throwing out the second half in terms of, like, do you think he was just worn down? Or, I mean, he hit under 200 in both August and September/October. Is that just a sign of wearing down, or do you think the league kind of adjusted to what he was doing?
I mean, I think the league saw him for the whole, you know, the whole 2015 as well. So it does seem a little bit more like a slump. And he was dealing with a couple. I believe he was banged up at the time, maybe a bruise, maybe a hand injury. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like he was just a little bit lost out there at the plate. He was lost out there ever since, like, he just never fully got it all back together. And you know, that could be obviously I think that portends, or at least indicates that there's downside as well. But if we're talking about, the upside, I think there's a reasonable shot that that's not who he is going forward.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they certainly had him in years past, but I think he was one of the guys who kind of changed his swing entering the season, which was part of the reason it was easier to buy in on his first half. But yeah, I think you're right, and I think there's plenty of reason to be optimistic on him.
Craig, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is 25 on this list. When he does break into the majors, is he at the hot or cold corner?
I think he's a first baseman. I mean, maybe left field, depending on how mobile he is given his size. But I might be one of the more pessimistic people out there on this front. But I think there's probably, I don't know, I'd go like 75% chance he's a first baseman.
Where would he rank for you if you thought he would stay at third?
He can hit. I don't know. I'd probably take him if I was sure he was going to be a third baseman. I might take him over Moustakas.
Yep.
On this list, I've always been low on Moustakas, so you have to factor that in. But probably around that area.
Fair enough. So dropping to 27 through 33. Craig, we will stay with you. Would you rather have Ryan McMahon, who's at 30, would you rather have him stay a Rocky but move to first base, or leave the Rockies org but stay at third base?
Oh, man, that's tough.
I know. That's why I asked.
That's a good question. You know, I think I might rather him at third. And that might be... I'm willing to say I might not be catching up. I know, like, when we went through the first base list, it kind of thinned out a little more than we expected, right? But I think some of that is also addressed by how many guys end up with first base eligibility, like, throughout any given season and are productive with it. So the first base depth in the offseason kind of gets flushed out as the season goes on. But... even so, I think just the positional value of having I think McMahon can hit. I know last year was really bad, but I think he can hit, and I think he can hit with power. And I think he can do that whether he's in Colorado or not. That was always kind of just gravy to me. So I would kind of prefer to have his natural talent at third, where he's not a bad third baseman, than just trying to take advantage of Coors Field. I mean, there are plenty of other good places to hit too. So,
sure. Jeff, Ryan Healy is 28 on this list. And for the second time, I'm going to ask you to pretend to be Brett. If you had to justify ranking Healy here, you know, behind some prospects and behind not super exciting guys like Hernan Perez, how would you defend it?
I mean, the first thing I would look at kind of is that his 13 home runs in 72 or in 283 plate appearances is not really indicative of anything he's ever done previously. And he did that with the Athletics. He kind of seemed to me, it looks like someone that kind of took advantage of pitchers not quite paying attention or figuring him out once he got called up. I mean, he definitely was attacking pitches that were available to him. I mean, he only walked 4.2% of the time. I think that it's very likely that there's some kind of league-wide adjustment coming to him. And given that he doesn't run, that there's probably not a lot of upside on, with on-base percentage with walks, I don't really buy, some of the higher averages he's posted as a minor leaguer. And given that the power is probably not going to be to the point where you can just project out what he did in 2016, that's not really an exciting player. It's fine, but it's not someone that you put ahead of the players kind of ahead of him.
Fair enough. I'm satisfied with that answer. Good job, Jeff. Okay, 34 through 40. This is a very, very good lightning round question that I've been working on for a long time. Jeff, talk about anyone in the 34 through 40 range you want to talk about.
I'll talk about Matt Duffy because he's probably going to be shortstop eligible within short order, right? He's going to be the starting shortstop.
I believe I think that's the plan, yeah.
Right, because he was only, if he doesn't hurt his Achilles, re-injure his Achilles, he was only two games short of 20 games at shortstop last year. So he would be on that list. He's kind of the guy that puts up the kind of production that I think gets underrated in fantasy baseball the most, which is nothing drastic in, I don't even know if that's a word or how you pronounce that word, at any given category, but he does provide production across all of the fantasy categories, and he's moving. I mean, Tampa Bay is not a great place to hit, but it's better than San Francisco. So he's a guy that if someone was this down on, I would happily be meeting that price.
Craig, same question to you.
I just want to say I feel like you've really exposed your roots as a reporter with your talk about question.
Talk about? Yeah, I thought I was pretty proud of it. Yeah.
I know you posed me a question, but again, I'd like your opinion on something just to get you involved a little bit. Jumping back to the end of the last list, are you a little surprised?
Hold on. I'd like to cut in on jumping real quick just so the people know that as far as jumping and vertical leap is concerned, of the people talking on this podcast, Craig has by far the largest vertical. That's all. Back to you,
Craig. I maintain I could have gotten a little higher if I wanted to murder Brett's little girl, but I didn't think that would be the polite thing to do, to just dunk on Allison.
I mean, I didn't dunk on her. I want to make that clear. I crossed her up brutally.
Okay. You did. You
and slammed it home.
You devastated her. I'm not. That was
you caught
that's
her flat-footed for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was going to say, I was a little surprised at how low Eugenio Suarez was on this list for Brett. Like, he's only 25. He just hit 20 homers. He stole 11 bases.
I mean, he's definitely better than, like, Wilmer Flores, who Brett has above him. I don't really get that.
Just dynasty on age, like, would you take him over Prado? I mean, short term.
Yes.
I hear Prado, absolutely.
No, I would. I mean, I would have Suarez above Healy, I think, on this list. I believe more in Suarez's power. So I would have him probably at 27.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a case. I think Brett did some funky stuff here. I would probably put Solarte, Healy, and Suarez maybe up in the other group and in the group above with and Urzag and Lamb and Gong, and put Perez and Guerrero down in this tier. But yeah, I was just a little surprised to see him that low. I'd also take Suarez over Jose Reyes, personally, I think.
Well, it's not really a surprise that Brett ranked two Mets players above someone unworthy. So
okay, so I know you posed a question to me. What was the talk about what?
Talk about someone in the 34 to 40 range other than Matt Duffy.
Okay. This is gonna be a truly embarrassing thing, I think, but I'm really interested to see what happens with Pablo Sandoval. He's definitely in good shape. He has not you know, needed to be in good shape to be good before. He's been utterly atrocious. And it may just be, you know, me being naive, but, you know, that's a great place to hit. It's a great lineup to hit in. And I don't think he has to be the Pablo Sandoval of old to have value. So I really am keeping an eye on him this season. And I think there's potential for kind of a moderate reward, low risk investment there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the Red Sox don't really have very enticing options otherwise at third. You know, it looked like Moncada would bump him out for a while, but right now it's pretty much just Brock Holt or Josh Rutledge and Josh Rutledge's hair. So I think Sandoval is going to get at least, you know, 300 plate appearances to prove he really can't play in the majors anymore.
That better question now with Brock Holt, he did some weird stuff to his hair. Who's got better hair, Holt or Rutledge?
Look, I mean, at this moment, probably Rutledge, but we all know what Holt could do if mm-hmm. he needed to. And either way, they're both outclassed by Benintendi. So
yeah, no, I mean it's a strong trio to have though.
It really is. The hair is pretty good, although you do have to look at Dustin Pedroia's hair and knock down the overall team hair quality like a full notch.
Let's throw in Jackie Bradley and his
potential. Yeah, I was about to say.
Well, he's got very hit or miss hair for me.
Yeah.
When he goes full afro, he's an elite player.
Yeah, agreed.
Do we have to talk about anyone on the 40 to 50 list? That's not pretty. Well, actually, I'm kind of interested in Jomar Reyes, Craig. Am I mixing things up, or did you sort of like him too? I think you and I both kind of liked him.
I did like him heading into the season, and he kind of had a rough one. But keep in mind that, like, as of this moment, he's still not turned 20. February. So he played 2016 at 19 years old at High A Frederick, which, you know, that's an aggressive assignment. And yeah, he struck out basically four times to every walk. But you know, it was not a good offensive season, but what he did the year before was extremely good, especially for an 18-year-old in low A. And I think they'll probably send him back to high A, and he's going to be a little bit more age appropriate. He's still going to be really young for the level, right? So I think we kind of have to give him a mulligan on this. This feels a little low. I mean, as much as I like a guy like Rios, who swatted a ton of bombs for the Dodgers in high A and double A last year, like I would still bet on Reyes being the better major leaguer. I think he's fighting a little bit is whether he's actually a third baseman, although a guy like Reyes has that question out on him too. So, you know, I think that Reyes is someone to keep an eye on and potentially someone to buy low on if people are going to not factor in kind of age relative to level, which, you know, depending on the player, it is less relevant. I think with Jomar Reyes, it's actually pretty relevant.
Jeff, is Trevor Plouffe becoming an athletic the best argument for predestination in the modern era?
I'd agree. I think it's a pretty good one.
It was a really long pause for that.
What I was more focused on, though, is, you know, Escobar is mm-hmm. 34 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. He looks good for 34. I mean, yeah. I don't know production wise.
Killer Instagram production, I want to point out.
I mean, health wise, if I was an insurance company, I think he looks pretty good.
Yeah, I know George is going to throw a fit, but it is something I noticed too. Danny Valencia at 48 is absolutely insane to me. Like, I'm a little mad Brett isn't here so I can yell at him about this. I like what am I missing? I know I've generally been higher on Valencia than everyone not named George Bissell, but like Ben, what am I missing?
I'm assuming Brett doesn't think he'll be a third baseman for very long. And other than that, I don't know. I don't love Valencia, but I mean he's been pretty solid 2 years in a row now.
Three
was he?
2013, he hit 304, 335, 553. It was 50, okay. 50 games, but.
But he was crappy in 2014. I think between his age, you know, he's going to be 32. I don't know. I'd have him higher. I don't like him very much, but I think he should be in the tier above this one.
There are certainly faults, but like behind Miguel Andujar.
Yeah, that's
rude.
A bit much.
It's just rude. Or like David Wright might not swing a bat this year.
Well, he's a Met. I mean, I think we know.
have to adjust that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the idea is that Valencia is never going to be a third baseman again. And then what are the chances that he just platoons going forward?
I mean, is it...
Like, does he never get those...
Yeah, I guess.
I don't think he'll ever... I would take the under on him ever getting 500 plate appearances again.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's not going to have third base eligibility entering 2017, but I don't know that it's unreasonable. I know he wasn't great, but I...
Yeah.
Yeah. So Michael Chavis is at 50 on this list. I think there's actually a reasonable argument to be made that you'd be better off drafting Enya. Episode 81 of Tino. As always, we're going to send you out with a little housekeeping. The 2017 BP Annual is out and available to purchase on Amazon. Reviews so far include they try too hard to be funny and the paper is of much higher quality, so please be sure to order yours soon. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Jeff on Twitter at JLQ01. You can find Craig at CD. That's CD as in...
Court Decision.
Goldstein. You can find our producer, George, at George Bissell. And you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thanks for listening and have a good night.
I don't know.
Enya has more hits because she had one.
I mean, the guy hurt his thumb, Ben. It's a little harsh.
He didn't hurt his thumb for 3 professional seasons.
Oh. That's a good line. That's a legitimately.
Craig, you dunked on Brett's kids.
Oh, yeah. I crushed them.
With disregard.
Yeah, it was pretty demoralizing.
I'm shocked I had the highest vertical.
you went Charles Oakley on them?
I did not get wrestled to the ground, so I want to make that clear.
Oh, what a day.